The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, I'm Deborah Love for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues, bringing you information from respected sources about health matters that may be helpful for you or those you care about in consultation with your health care provider. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. This first article is appropriate since it's almost Thanksgiving, one of the biggest days of the year for travel by car. So here's a timely article about relieving back pain for drivers and their passengers too. It's an all-too-familiar feeling when a long road trip or commute triggers pain in the lower spine. More than 80% of people experience back pain in their lifetimes, with 70% of that pain being low back pain. According to Cole Chaney, MD, a specialist in pain medicine and spine care with Mayo Clinic Health System, many people with back pain describe car travel as a major challenge. Instead of avoiding car travel because of pain, try to 1. Pull over. Plan extra time to take breaks approximately every 30 to 60 minutes. Get out, stand, stretch, and walk. 2. Stay hydrated. Avoid long periods without drinking water. Staying hydrated can help reduce the risk of muscle tightening and cramps. Stops for any related bathroom breaks give you a chance to get out of the car and move or stretch. 3. Check your posture. In one study of drivers and lower back pain, more than 54% of people over the age of 40 have been driving with posture that causes or worsens pain. Avoid slouching or leaning forward. Placing a cushion or rolled-up towel at the curve of your lower back with about 3/4 to 1.5 inches of support can help. Reclining your seat slightly can relieve some pressure on your spine. And 4, turn up the heat. Heated seats have been shown to decrease periods of low back pain during long drives. While applying ice can help ease acute pain, save this for after you drive. Using ice in the car can be messy and can create a cold burn if left on too long. Some people benefit from special stretches or back braces to alleviate pain while driving. Discuss these options with your healthcare team. Your team may refer you to a specialist such as a physiatrist, physical therapist, or occupational therapist. It might take a few visits to find what works for you. And here are some roadside-friendly stretches. The first is the seated lower back rotational stretch. Here's how it goes. While sitting, cross your right leg over your left leg, bracing your left elbow against the outside of your right knee, twist and stretch to the right. Hold for 10 seconds. Repeat on the opposite side. Do this stretch 3 to 5 times on each side. This is a good one, so let me repeat it. While sitting, cross your right leg over your left leg, bracing your left elbow against the outside of your right knee, twist and stretch to the right side, and hold for 10 seconds, then repeat. The second exercise is simple. It's the shoulder blade squeeze. While sitting up straight, pull your shoulder blades together. Hold for 5 seconds, and then relax. Do this 3 to 5 times. With those, happy car tripping to you. Next, I have 3 articles, all from the Mayo Health newsletter, and they're all about illnesses or conditions that are relatively minor, but also can mean a lot to the people who have them, of course. The first is multiple myeloma. New treatments are helping people live longer and better. Plasma cells play a vital role in helping your body's immune system fight infections. But what if something goes wrong with these warrior white blood cells? Multiple myeloma is a type of cancer that occurs when cancerous plasma cells, called myeloma cells, multiply uncontrollably and build up in the bone marrow, the soft, porous tissue in the center of your bones. Myeloma cells produce antibodies called monoclonal proteins, or M proteins. These M proteins are useless to the body and can build up and crowd out healthy immune cells, weakening the immune system and the ability to combat illnesses. Older adults are more at risk of multiple myeloma. It's typically diagnosed in people in their 60s and 70s. Black adults are 2 to 3 times more likely to develop myeloma compared with white adults. The disease is more common in men, and having a family history of multiple myeloma also increases your risk. Though multiple myeloma is considered a rare cancer, it still affects about 35,000 adults in the U.S. each year. Symptoms can include bone pain, unintended weight loss, excessive thirst, constipation, mental fogginess, and fatigue. Early on, though, there may be no warning signs. While the exact cause of multiple myeloma is unknown, it often begins as a non-cancerous condition called monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance. Monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance, or MGUS. MGUS, like multiple myeloma, involves plasma cells that produce irregular M proteins. But in MGUS, there are too few of these proteins to cause symptoms or damage. The condition often goes unnoticed and is detected with testing performed for another reason. However, if M proteins start to multiply rapidly, they can cause major damage. These proteins can injure vital organs such as kidneys. They can also accelerate bone breakdown and prevent new bone from forming, leading to fractures and elevated calcium levels in the blood. When calcium levels rise too high, they can put further stress on the kidneys and even lead to kidney failure. In addition, the buildup of irregular cells in the bone marrow can crowd out healthy blood cell production, resulting in anemia. If MGUS or multiple myeloma is suspected, your care team may recommend a combination of tests to evaluate your condition. These can include blood tests to check for M proteins, urine tests, bone marrow biopsies, and CT scans. Although multiple myeloma cannot be prevented, early detection of MGUS offers a chance for close monitoring. This can allow your healthcare team to intervene before serious complications occur. Treatment for multiple myeloma may begin with a combination of drugs known as induction therapy. This treatment usually consists of 3 or 4 types of drugs, including some that stimulate the immune system to fight the cancer and target the production of M proteins. The drugs recommended for induction chemotherapy depend on factors such as your overall health and whether you are a stem cell transplant candidate. Stem cell transplantation is often included as part of the initial treatment for multiple myeloma. If you are a candidate for transplant, the process involves collecting stem cells from the blood. Stem cells produce all the functioning cells in the blood, maintain tissue, and repair wounds. Then, high doses of chemotherapy are used to destroy cancerous plasma cells before the stem cells are reinfused. The stem cells regenerate healthy marrow over several weeks to months. This treatment could be compared to gardening. Multiple myeloma overgrows the bone marrow with invasive weeds. Chemotherapy is like a garden overhaul, clearing out the overgrowth. The infused stem cells are like freshly planted seeds, restoring healthy growth. Much progress has been made in the treatment of multiple myeloma. According to Giselle Cook, a hematologist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, The survival rate for this cancer was once 3 to 5 years. On average, it is now about 10 years longer. Many people with myeloma are living longer and with a better quality of life than ever before, says Dr. Cook. Hopefully, experts can extend the expected survival beyond 20 years and eventually find a cure in this lifetime. Powerful new tools called immunotherapies help the immune system fight cancer cells. One such therapy is chimeric antigen receptor, CAR, or CAR, T cell therapy. It uses a person's T cells, a type of white blood cell, that are altered to destroy targets on myeloma cells with extraordinary results, says Dr. Cook. CAR T cell therapy allows people to not need therapy for extended periods, increasing quality of life. A major study is testing whether CAR T cell therapy could work even better if used earlier in treatment. A new type of CAR T cell therapy targeting a different protein called GPRC5D also has shown promising results, even in people whose cancer returned after previous CAR T therapy. Bispecific antibodies are another promising immunotherapy option for multiple myeloma that has not responded to prior treatment or has come back. These antibodies, including teclistamab, also known as Tecvayli, elranatamab, also known as Elrexfio, and talquetamab, also known as Talvey, bind to two different types of cells, giving them a dual means of attack. A new bispecific antibody, linvoseltamab, also known as linozific, was approved in July 2025. Lots of fun words to pronounce there. This drug helps bring T cells closer to the cancer cells to destroy them. With early detection, more targeted treatments, and a better understanding and use of immunotherapy, multiple myeloma can now be managed like a chronic illness for some people. This is especially true for those diagnosed at an early stage who respond well to initial treatments. But while these new drugs are important advancements, side effects are possible, including some that may be life-threatening. The goal is to keep pushing the disease into deeper remission for longer stretches and with fewer side effects, says Dr. Cook. We also tailor treatment plans to each person's goals, so we're not just adding years to life, but life to years. Your healthcare team can work closely with you to monitor side effects and adjust medications as needed. Your team can also connect you with supportive care services such as physical therapy, nutrition counseling, and palliative care. Myeloma support groups can provide a sense of community during a difficult time. Find local groups through the International Myeloma Foundation at www.myeloma.org or call them at 800-452-2873. 800-452-2873 for the International Myeloma Foundation. Our second somewhat rare condition is giant cell arteritis. This is a close look at a complex condition. A familiar pain surges through the sides of your head like lightning. You rub your temples, desperate for relief. Most often, a headache is just that and nothing more. But these throbbing headaches may be more than they seem. Giant cell arteritis is an inflammatory condition of the arteries, most commonly the arteries in the temples, known as temporal arteries. The condition mainly affects adults over age 50 of Scandinavian or Northern European descent. While uncommon, it's the most common type of inflammation of the blood vessels. While the cause of inflammation in giant cell arteritis is not known, it's believed to involve the immune system mistakenly attacking the artery walls. These attacks can affect the aorta. That's the body's largest artery and main highway that carries blood from the heart through the chest and abdomen to the rest of the body. This can cause a bulge to form in the wall of the aorta, most commonly the thoracic aorta in the chest. This is known as an aortic aneurysm. Symptoms of giant cell arteritis can include new and lasting headaches in the temples, jaw pain while chewing, scalp tenderness, and sudden vision loss. If not treated, the condition can lead to permanent blindness. About half of people with giant cell arteritis also have an inflammatory condition called polymyalgia rheumatica. It causes muscle pain and stiffness around the shoulders and hips. Giant cell arteritis sometimes is misdiagnosed because its symptoms resemble other more common conditions. Your healthcare team may recommend blood tests and a physical exam focusing on your temporal arteries to help diagnose your condition. Giant cell arteritis can cause narrowing of the arteries in your upper arm, so your care team may note a difference in blood pressure between the arms. A biopsy of the temporal artery traditionally has been used to confirm a diagnosis, but this can cause bruising, discomfort, and other complications. Studies are focusing on non-invasive ways of diagnosing giant cell arteritis. Imaging of the temporal arteries, aorta, and large arteries, such as with ultrasound, MRI, CT, and positron emission tomography, also known as PET, is being evaluated. If you are diagnosed with giant cell arteritis, your healthcare team may also monitor your aorta with periodic imaging tests. So, from symptoms to solutions. Outcomes are often good when giant cell arteritis is caught early. Because of the risk of vision loss, immediate treatment is necessary. The first step is high doses of a corticosteroid drug such as prednisone. These medications help reduce inflammation and may be needed for 2 years or more to preserve existing vision. However, corticosteroids likely won't restore vision loss that's already occurred. Corticosteroids carry a risk of side effects. They include muscle weakness, high blood pressure, weight gain, a weakened immune system, increased blood sugar or glucose, unhealthy cholesterol and triglyceride or lipid levels, osteoporosis, and fractures. Your healthcare team may recommend that you take certain supplements or medications to counteract some of these effects. Acetaminophen, Tylenol, and others can help with head pain, but generally avoid taking ibuprofen, naproxen, sodium, and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs known as NSAIDs while taking corticosteroids. They can increase the risk of bleeding in your stomach and digestive tract. Healthy habits also help with reducing side effects and preventing complications. Broadly, that involves eating well, exercising, and staying current with vaccinations. It also means seeing your care team regularly to monitor your blood sugar, lipids, blood sugar, and bone health. Experts advise getting 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day and 15 to 20 micrograms, which is equivalent to 600 to 800 international units, of vitamin D, with specific amounts depending on your age and sex. This can be done through diet or with added use of calcium and vitamin D supplements. Weight-bearing exercise, such as walking, jogging, or dancing, is heart healthy and can help prevent bone loss caused by long-term steroid use. Toclizumab, known as Actemra, was the first medication approved to manage giant cell arteritis. The drug suppresses the immune system and is given as an injection under the skin once weekly. In 2025, the Food and Drug Administration also approved upadacitinib, known as Rinvoq, for the condition. This medication, taken by mouth daily, works by inhibiting JAK enzymes, which reduces inflammation. While corticosteroids remain the primary initial treatment, these newly approved medications can help you taper off long-term high-dose steroids more quickly. This allows the disease to remain controlled while reducing steroid-related side effects. However, the new medications are more costly and come with side effects such as risk of infection. Ongoing research is paving the way for even more potential new treatments in the future. Lastly, our third more unusual condition is small bowel bleeding. If you notice bloody or black stool, it might seem obvious that you're bleeding from your gastrointestinal or GI tract, but finding the exact location of a bleed can require some detective work. That's especially true if the source of the bleeding is your small bowel intestine, your small intestine, also called the small bowel. When partially digested food leaves your stomach, it passes through the lengthy small intestine. This organ breaks down food further while also absorbing nutrients and water. Bleeding in this hard-to-reach area of the GI tract is less typical, accounting for about 5% of all GI bleeds. However, small bowel bleeding becomes more common with age. As you get older, the mucus lining of the intestines may thin. Blood vessels may become swollen, fragile, and twisted. In addition, tumors, polyps, or ulcers may form. These may lead to bleeding. So, how do they find the source? When bleeding occurs in the small bowel, symptoms depend on the rate of blood loss. If a vessel bleeds slowly or intermittently, you may feel tired or short of breath as your red blood cell count slowly decreases. When a vessel leaks a lot at once, you might notice bloody or black, tarry stools, or you may vomit blood. Most GI bleeding occurs in the upper or lower GI tract, not the small intestine. Because of this, a healthcare team often starts the search with more common diagnostic tests, such as a colonoscopy or upper endoscopy. These tools excel at finding bleeding in the esophagus, stomach, rectum, and colon. However, they leave much of the small intestine unexplored. Several tools enable your care team to see all of the small intestine. However, none of these options accurately locates bleeds 100% of the time. Some tests are good for finding bleeding from blood vessels, for example, but tend to miss bleeding from sources such as masses or inflammation. Also, a blood vessel may bleed only off and on, making the source easy to miss. As a result, some people need multiple tests or repeated tests before the location can be pinpointed. So here are some different kinds of testing. The first is capsule enteroscopy. In this procedure, you swallow a small capsule that contains a tiny camera. The wireless camera travels through your GI tract, taking thousands of pictures along the way. The images are transmitted to a recorder worn on a belt around the waist. In about 8 hours, the capsule travels the entire length of the small intestine. The recorded images are sent to a computer that combines the images to create a video for an expert to watch to look for sources of the bleeding. Then there are imaging tests. Various imaging tests allow healthcare professionals to visualize detailed images of the small intestine. Two of these options are computerized tomography enterography, or CTE. A CTE scan is an X-ray that shows cross-sectional images of the intestine. Before the test, you'll drink a contrast agent that highlights the small intestine. You'll also be given an intravenous contrast that makes the blood vessels more visible. Another such imaging test is magnetic resonance enterography, or MRE. This test uses a magnetic field to create images of the GI tract. You'll be given a contrast material that helps the small intestine show up more clearly. Then another kind of test is the double balloon enteroscopy. Enteroscopes are long, thin tubes used to visualize the inside of the bowel. The scope has a light and a camera on one end, which make the inside of the bowel visible. Typical enteroscopes are not equipped to reach deep into the small intestine. However, a specific type of enteroscope called a double balloon enteroscope can go much farther. Inflating and deflating balloons on the end of the scope and the outer tube creates an opening for the scope to travel further. Unlike other advanced testing options, double balloon enteroscopy can also be used to treat a small bowel bleed. Stopping the bleeding. Sometimes the bleeding resolves on its own. If it appears to be related to use of a drug, such as an anticoagulant or aspirin, your healthcare team may work with you to reevaluate its use. To stop an artery or vein from leaking blood, a doctor can use a scope to deliver an electric current, cauterizing the blood vessel. Another option is a small metal clip to pinch off blood flow. Specialized tools also can be passed through a scope to remove small polyps. Surgery often is needed to remove tumors. So, here's some advice about when to seek care. If you have symptoms of a GI bleed, mention them to a healthcare professional, no matter how seemingly mild. Consult your primary healthcare team for mild to moderate fatigue, mild to moderate lightheadedness, mild shortness of breath, or abdominal discomfort. Seek immediate care for symptoms of shock, such as dizziness, vomiting, or a rapid pulse. Other reasons to seek immediate care: vomiting blood, rectal bleeding, black tarry stool, severe fatigue, lightheadedness or shortness of breath, heart palpitations, or loss of consciousness. Well, that's all for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next week for our Thanksgiving episode. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Deborah Love, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. I would love to hear from you. That number again is 919-832-5138. As always, thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Be well and healthy.